The title of the series that we're in the midst of right now is Know Thine Enemy, and we're in part three of that series. You know, there can be no doubt, based on what we have looked at and discovered in the last two messages, there can be no doubt that true Christianity, that real Christians indeed have enemies. No matter what the rest of Christendom wants to say today, no matter how they may look at it, even if they only think there's one enemy that they have to be concerned about, and that is Satan, we have enemies. It's been confirmed in our past messages. It's been confirmed and established, first of all, by the Scriptures. The Scriptures make it very clear that indeed Christians, specifically Christian Israel, has had in the past and has now enemies. It's been confirmed and established by the martyrs and the past persecuted who have gone on before us. And it has even been confirmed and established by Christians, by Christianity's enemies themselves. You know, when people are asked the question, who's the enemy of Christian America today? There are a variety of different answers that are usually given. Some, of course, just are going to say that it's Satan. We've already talked about how disarming that is to just say, well, Satan is the enemy of Christian America today, because all you're left to do against this imagined, quote-unquote, creature is to pray about the situation. There isn't much else that you can do other than just pray about the situation and try to win someone else to Christ. And not that those two things aren't important. And don't get me wrong, don't misunderstand me and think that I don't believe in Satan. The Bible certainly talks about Satan, or probably better translated, an adversary. The Bible talks about an adversary, and that is normally translated as Satan. I believe in a Satan, but it's very important that we also identify this adversary, Satan, correctly. And I really think that there's been a misidentification out there in the Christian world of Satan and who and what he is and what he's about that has taken the people and their attention and got them down on a rabbit trail, so to speak, concerning the enemies of Christianity. Some would want to call the enemy of Christianity today communism, or possibly humanism, or possibly masonry, or the New Age movement, or the occult, or etc., etc., etc. There are many things that could come up as possible enemies of the enemy of Christian America today. You know, there's no question that these are fronts or attacks on Christianity today. But I need to ask the question again, is there an enemy that is unidentified by the majority today? Is there an even bigger threat to Christianity than even those that I've just named or that we could name today? You know, the importance of correctly identifying the enemy, I think, can be found or seen and if we look back at the Vietnam conflict. If we go back and look at what took place there, you know, would anybody say today, as we go back and look at that Vietnam conflict, would anybody dare say today that we won? You know, anybody who knows what's happened then and knows what's happened since then has to know that we lost the fight. Americanism didn't win. Communism won in the Vietnam conflict, no matter what they've told us since then. You know, I really think that had we identified the enemy correctly over there, it had been a whole different outcome. Matter of fact, it had probably been a whole different beginning as well. Were the Viet Cong the enemy in that situation? They were an enemy. But were they the enemy in the Vietnam conflict? You know, I believe if Americans had correctly identified the enemy in the Vietnam conflict, there would have been no Vietnam conflict. They'd have never gone because they'd have realized who was behind what was taking place and what they were up to. Now, that's a whole other message in itself. We won't get into that. But I think for those of you who know what went on in that situation, it's very clear that had the enemy in the Vietnam conflict been correctly identified, there would have been a whole different result at that time. You know, thankfully, it may be in a minority situation, but thankfully the enemy has been correctly identified. Been correctly identified, as we've seen in the past two messages, as being, and again this isn't popular, but nonetheless, I put it out and I challenge, if it's not true, to show me that it is not true, but that the enemy has been correctly identified behind the scenes as the Jews, or more specifically, Judaism and Talmudic Zionism. You know, I'll never can remember so clearly back several years ago when Glenn Snowgren, some of you know Glenn, used to live here, I believe, didn't he? When Glenn Snowgren, when I was in preaching with the church in Aurora several years ago, his son was living with myself and Kim Olson at the time, and I can remember so clearly, I remember right where it was in the hall, because it really took me back at that time, because I didn't understand many of the things that I understand now. And Glenn Snowgren said to me, he said, "Ted, isn't it a wonder that so many Bible college students can come fresh out of Bible college and can tell you all about the Mormons? They can tell you all about Jehovah's Witnesses. They can tell you all about Christian Scientists and on, but they can't tell you a thing about Judaism." And it really did strike me, and I thought, I'm glad he didn't ask me that question. Because I could have told him about Mormonism, and I could have told him about Jehovah's Witnesses, and I could have told him about many of the other quote-unquote enemies or cults that are against the Christian principle as found in the Scriptures. But I couldn't tell him hardly a thing about current Judaism. Matter of fact, I probably didn't even know that it was an enemy at the time. And it really did strike me, why can't people, or why can't Bible college students, or why can't the majority of preachers even today tell us about Judaism and its attack on Christianity, the thing that's spoken of, the enemy that's spoken of most often in the Scriptures? You know, I'll never forget that. Thankfully, again, the enemy has been identified, as we saw correctly identified in past messages, identified by Yahshua himself in the first century, identified by the apostolic fathers, such as Justin in 116 A.D., identified by the great Reformation leader, Martin Luther, in the 1400s, identified correctly by great American statesmen, such as George Washington and Benjamin Franklin in the 1700s, correctly identified by the great American inventor, Henry Ford Sr., in the 1920s, and correctly identified today by great patriots and Christians in our present time, such as former Congressman Paul Finley and Pastor Pete Peters and others like him. And thankfully, because we could scratch all the rest, because people, I could share all the rest, and you could say, oh, that's just a bunch of bigoted, a bunch of racist, a bunch of white supremacist attituded people. But thankfully, the enemy has been correctly identified by the Jews themselves, by the enemy. You know, so aptly named was Kenneth Goff's book, "Still 'Tis Our Ancient Foe." Found in the song, probably took it from the song, "Our Mighty Fortress is Our God." So rightly named, because the enemy that we find Christ so aptly describing in the New Testament is still our ancient foe. You know, but what about all of these other fronts? Communism and humanism and the New Age movement and all of these other things. What about these other fronts, and where do they come in as far as the overall picture is concerned? In light of that question, let's turn to Revelation chapter 17. Seems to be a scripture. Maybe this is to be the text for this series, because it certainly seems to be a passage that I'm using over and over again throughout this passage or throughout this series. Revelation 17, and I want to read the first five verses. It says, "And one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and spoke to me, saying, 'Come here, I shall show you the judgment of the great harlot who sits on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth committed acts of immorality, and those who dwell on the earth were made drunk with the wine of her immorality. And he carried me away in the spirit into a wilderness, and I listened to what he sees. He says, And I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast full of blasphemous names, having seven heads and ten horns. And the woman was clothed in purple and scarlet, and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, having in her hand a cup full of abominations and of the unclean things of her immorality. And upon her forehead a name was written, a mystery, Babylon the Great. Now think about that. It says it's a mystery. Why is it a mystery? Well, at least one of the reasons is mystery. Not only do most people not identify mystery Babylon correctly today, but it's also a mystery because Babylon the Great had been destroyed centuries before. It's talking about a mystery Babylon. It says, verse 5, and upon her forehead a name was written, a mystery, Babylon the Great. And listen to how she is described, the mother of harlots. And by the way, up in verse 1, I prefer the King James where it calls her the great whore. The great whore, who is identified in verse 5 as the mother of harlots and of the abominations of the earth. What about these other fronts? Communism and humanism and the New Age movement and so on and so forth. Where do they come in? Well, I believe they come in right here as is described here in Revelation 17 verses 1 through 5. That the great whore has many harlots. She has raised up harlots to do her bidding. Different arms of the octopus is maybe the way to look at it. Are the arms the central organization? No, it's the head of the octopus. The whore, that's the bottom line when it comes to the enemy. In light of what we see in Revelation 17, let me read once again a quote that I already read to you. I believe it was in the last message. Let me, in light of that passage, which I believe begins to answer, what about all these other fronts? Let me read to you Henry Ford's quote once again that I read last week. He says, quote, It is rather surprising, is it not, that whichever way you turn to trace the harmful streams of influence that flow through society, you come upon a group of Jews. In sports corruption, a group of Jews. In exploitative finance, a group of Jews. In theatrical degeneracy, a group of Jews. In liquor propaganda, a group of Jews. In control of national war policies, a group of Jews. Absolutely dominating the wireless communications of the world, a group of Jews. The menace of the movies, a group of Jews. In control of the press through business and financial pressure, a group of Jews. War profiteers, 80% of them Jews. The miasma of so-called popular music, which combines weak-mindedness and every suggestion of lewdness, Jews. And organizers of the active opposition to Christian laws and customs, again, Jews. You know, of course, again, the cry has certainly gone out over the years, Henry Ford was just a racist. Well, is that so? Well, or has it ever been challenged what he said to disprove what he said as not being true? Well, I suggest to you that the Jews themselves admit exactly what he said. Listen to Protocol number 13, Article 6 of the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. Protocol 13, Article 6 says, quote, who will ever suspect, then, that all these peoples were staged managed by us, according to a political plan which no one has so much as guessed at in the course of many centuries? They say, we controlled it. We have put them to work to do our bidding, and nobody or very few ever guess that it's us that are doing it. No wonder they do quite a job at what they do. Well, is that true? Is it true what the protocols say there? Is it true what Henry Ford says? Well, in the following messages, we want to see whether Henry Ford Sr.'s statement concerning the Jews can indeed be documented. And again, as I mentioned in past messages, this series of messages is really to furnish the documentation as a tool to prove to people. Like I can think of people in my family members, they've got to have the documentation, and sometimes even then it's just a scapegoat so they don't have to listen anyway, and you give them the documentation, it won't matter. But there are people out there who, if given the documentation, will turn and change. And if that's not the case, then you and I wouldn't be sitting in this room here today, because we accepted the truth of what can be found through the documentation. So in the next several messages. Again, I want to document. I want to see if Henry Ford Sr.'s statement can indeed be documented, to prove and see if the Jews indeed are behind the scenes involved in all the corrupting influence in America today. Now, we want to begin in this message with communism, as communism is most often considered Christian America's greatest foe and enemy. And matter of fact, this one will probably take this message, it will take all of this message and probably all of the next message to cover, to document, to show the facts that indeed this great foe of America today, regretfully, in today's society, is starting to become not even considered that great of a foe. But she is a foe. She is an enemy. But let's see if there isn't someone behind the communistic hand that is not only fighting America, but that is starting even to rule America. Let's begin by looking at communism. You know, today there are certainly many anti-communists, but do they really understand communism? There are a lot of people, there are a lot of groups like the John Birchers and many others who are anti-communists, but do they really understand communism? In today's message, we want to see if communism can, first of all, be found in the Scriptures. And to see, indeed, if it can, what the Scriptures, or how the Scriptures describe communism, and what communism is attributed to, if indeed, again, it can be found in the Scriptures. Let me ask, can communism be found in the Scriptures? Is it there to be found? Well, of course, the word communism or communist is not going to be found in the Scriptures. That word spelled out that way certainly is not going to be found in the Scriptures. It was a word that was not used until many centuries after the New Testament had been completed, after the Scriptures had been completed. It was a term in its current use that was never even in existence at that time. So obviously we're not going to find the word in the Scriptures. So if communism is to be found in the Bible, as it will not be found through the Word, she will have to be found by her description rather than by her name. Does that make sense? It's not going to be found there by her name. It's got to be found by description. So let's look real quickly at a simple description or some elements that describe communism today. I want to look at just three, and there's many more that could be used, but I want to look at just three identifying marks of communism today. Number one, these three. Number one, her emblems are the hammer and the sickle. Number two, she is known as red communism. And number three, she is anti-Christian. Now, if we can find in the Bible something that fulfills that description of communism, and those are pretty specific, if we can find something in the Scriptures, even though it's not named communism, if we can find something in the Scriptures that fulfill those identifying marks of communism, then it would become very clear that it's probably one and the same with communism. Let's look at the Scriptures. Let's turn, first of all, to Jeremiah chapter 50. Jeremiah chapter 50. Again, remember that we're looking for this description. Her emblems are the hammer and the sickle. She is known as red communism, and she is anti-Christian. Jeremiah 50, I want to start with verses 14 through 16, and we'll jump down to verse 23. Listen to what Jeremiah has to say here. Jeremiah chapter 50, starting with verse 14, it says, "Draw up your battle lines against Babylon on every side, and you who bend the bow, shoot at her. Do not be sparing with your arrows, for she has sinned against Yahweh. Raise your battle cry against her on every side. She has given herself up. Her pillars have fallen. Her walls have been torn down. For this is the vengeance of Yahweh. Take vengeance on her. As she has done to others, so do to her." Verse 16, listen very carefully. It says, "Cut off the sower from Babylon and the one who wields the sickle at the time of harvest. From before the sword of the oppressor, they will each turn back to his own people, and they will each flee to his own land." Did you hear it? Verse 16, "Cut off the sower from Babylon and the one who wields the sickle at the time of the harvest." Jump down to verse 23. Verse 23 says, "How?" Talking about the same situation, the same nation, quote unquote. It says in verse 23, how the hammer of the whole earth has been cut off and broken, how Babylon has become an object of horror among the nations. I don't know about you, but when I first saw that, when it was first pointed out to me years ago, here was the emblems that communism so dearly holds to, found in the scriptures and identified with Babylon. Well, let's see if we can't find some of the other descriptions fitting Babylon as well. Let's go back now to Revelation 17 once again, where we began. Revelation 17, and reading part of what we've already read, but I want you to pay close attention, a little bit more attention to what we read this time in regards to where we're at. Revelation chapter 17, starting with verse 3 this time. It says, "And he carried me away in the spirit into a wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast, full of blasphemous names, having seven heads and ten horns. And the woman was clothed in purple and scarlet, adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, having in her hand a gold cup full of abominations and of the unclean things of her immorality." And then, of course, he identifies her and he says, "And upon her forehead a name was written, a mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and the abominations of the earth." Did you catch how this woman is described in this passage? She is riding on a scarlet or a red beast. Not literally a red dinosaur of some kind, but in prophetic language, she is riding on a beast that's red. And she herself is even dressed in clothing of scarlet or red. So again, Babylon not only had the symbols of the hammer and the sickle, but she's also identified as being red. What about this anti-Christian concept? Can that be attributed to Babylon as well? Well, let's go to back to Jeremiah chapter 51 this time. Jeremiah chapter 51. And let's look at verse 49. I should have had you hold Revelation 17 because we want to jump back there right away. Jeremiah 51, listen to verse 49. It says, "Indeed Babylon is to fall for the slain of Israel, as also for Babylon the slain of all the earth have fallen." It says Babylon is to fall. Why? She's to fall for all the slain of Israel. Now keep in mind, as this was written back in the New Testament, there were no Christians. There were people who were known as Israelites who were God's people. And Babylon was responsible, according to this passage in Jeremiah, was responsible for the slain of God's people, Israel. Now, let's tie that in and let's see if we can't make it even more clear. Let's go back now to Revelation 17 once again. Revelation 17, we'll pick it up with verse 5 and read verse 6 with it this time. Revelation 17 and verse 5, and it says, "Upon her forehead a name was written, a mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and the abominations of the earth." Now listen to verse 6. "And I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the witnesses." And by the way, that word witness is translated from a Greek word that is the Greek word that we get our word martyr from. Fits a lot better if you put martyr in there. "And I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Yahshua. And when I saw her, I wondered greatly." Look at Revelation 18 and verse 2. So we make sure that we identify who's being spoken of here. It says, "And I cried out with a mighty voice, saying, Fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great. And she has become a dwelling place of demons and a prison of every unclean spirit and a prison of every unclean and hateful bird." Jump to the last verse of the chapter now that we've identified who it's speaking about. And it says, "And in her," this Babylon, "was found the blood of the prophets and of the saints and all who have been slain on the earth." Now I ask you, is communism anti-Christian to the point where it has slain untold myriads of numbers of Christians today because simply of their faith? Notice what it says about Mystery Babylon. Not only are her emblems, the hammer and the sickle, not only is she identified as being red, but very clearly she's attributed with the blood of Israel, the blood of all the saints, and the blood of all the prophets. She is, indeed, anti-God's people, anti-Christian America, anti-Christian Israel. if you want to so say it that way. She is indeed identified or can be associated with all those identifying marks of communism. In Babylon is found the description of communism, as found in the scriptures that we just read. But somebody says, so? Well, so what? What's that have to do today to do, what does that have today to do with Judaism? So what if Babylon is attributed as being are attributed with the characteristics or some of the characteristics of communism? So what does that have to do with Judaism? Well, Babylon is also called, is also named the daughter of Babylon. That doesn't make, maybe doesn't make a lot of sense, but Babylon is also identified as the daughter of Babylon. You're still saying, well, so what? Well, let me just verify the fact. In Jeremiah 50 and verse 42, now remember, amidst all these identifying marks of Israel, the fact that she's identified as being red, and with the fact that she's identified with the hammer and the sickle, and with the fact that she's out to destroy God's people, in Jeremiah 50, 42, it says this, quote, "They seize their bow and javelin. They are cruel and have no mercy. Their voice roars like the sea, and they ride on horses, marshaled like a man for battle against you, O daughter of Babylon." Babylon, at least in this particular verse, is called the daughter of Babylon. And again, you say, so what? Why even bring that out? Well, because I ask you this question. Who is the daughter of Babylon? Identified in Scripture. Let's turn to Psalms 137. Excuse me, Psalms 137. Reading verses 7 through 9. Listen carefully. It says, "Remember, O Yahweh, against the sons of Edom, the day of Jerusalem, who said, raise it to its very foundation. O daughter of Babylon, you devastated one, how blessed will be the one who repays you with the recompense with which you have repaid us. How blessed will be the one who seizes and dashes your little ones against the rock." Did you notice that here again it identifies something as being the daughter of Babylon? But what is she made synonymous with in this passage? Let me read it again. It says, "Remember, O Yahweh, against the sons of Edom, the day of Jerusalem, who said, raise it, O daughter of Babylon, you devastated one, how blessed will be the one who repays you with the recompense with which you have repaid us." The daughter of Babylon is in this passage made one and the same with the sons of Edom. So Babylon, according to Scriptures, also equals Edom. And thus it should be simple logic to conclude that if communism equals Babylon in the Scriptures, and Babylon equals Edom, then Edom also equals communism. But you say, so what? What's that have to do with Judaism? Well, how is Edom described in the Bible? Keeping in mind the description of communism, let's look at how Edom is described in the Bible. Let's turn this time to Isaiah 63. Isaiah 63 and the first two verses is what we'd like to read. Listen very carefully with this, in this description of Edom. It says, "Who is this one who comes from Edom with garments of glowing colors?" Now, in my translation, the New American Translation, it has a footnote, and it says, for glowing, for the word glowing, it also has the word crimson, it should be, or literally is the word crimson. "Who is this one who comes from Edom with garments of of crimson color?" What's crimson? Different shades of red. It says, "Who is this one who comes from Edom with garments of crimson colors from Bozra? This one who is majestic in his apparel, marching in the greatness of his strength. It is I who speak in righteousness, mighty to save. Why is your apparel red, and your garments like the one who treads in the winepress?" Edom is identified as being red. Edom literally means red. The Edomites, as we're going to see, are the descendants of Esau. Esau was hairy and red all over when he was born. even sold his birthright for a pot of red stew, basically. He is identified. Esau was always identified in being red, and Edom, as we will see, are the descendants, or the Edomites are the descendants of Esau. And keep this in mind, that the Edomites or Reds, because that's how the word can be translated, the Edomites or the Reds have always been the enemies of true Israel. Again, keep in mind that Edom means red, and the Edomites or the Reds, because of how you can translate it, have always been the enemies of true Israel. Listen to what Dr. Oscar Levi has to say in regards to this. He says, quote, "Bolshevism is a religion and a faith." Did you catch that? Bolshevism is a religion and a faith. How could those half-converted believers dream to vanquish the truthful and the faithful of their own creed? Those holy crusaders. I don't know about you, but crusaders sounds like they're on the march in a war. Those holy crusaders who have gathered around the red standard of the prophet Karl Marx and who have fought under the daring guidance of those experienced officers of all latter-day revolutions, the Jew. Now, I meant to write down exactly where that's written. I do have it at home. If anybody wants the verification of exactly where that's found, I can give it to you if you call me. But notice that it calls Bolshevism a religion and a faith. And it talks about those who are responsible and have gathered around the red standard of the prophet Karl Marx. The Reds have always been enemies of God's people. And Dr. Oscar Levy makes it very clear that that is certainly the case. Edom certainly is described, means red, certainly is described or is synonymous with Babylon in the Scriptures. But who is Edom? Why talk about Edom in this situation? Who is Edom? We find in the 1925 edition of the Jewish Encyclopedia, not just any encyclopedia, but in the 1925 edition of the Jewish Encyclopedia, it says, quote, "Edom is in modern Jewry." End quote. The Biblical Encyclopedia, Volume 2, Column 118, we also find that it also states that the Edomites are a part of Jewry. Keep in mind that the Scriptures say very clearly, by the testimony of two or three witnesses, let every fact be confirmed. You've got two witnesses by their own mouth and the mouth of others. It proves that Edom is in modern Jewry today. Well, let me ask you, when did this happen? When did all this happen that Edom all of a sudden became Jewry? How did Edom evolve into modern Jewry today? But wait a minute, you say. Aren't the Jews Israelites? Isn't that how most of the people today would respond? If I start talking about the Jews being descendants of Edom today, they're going to say, no, wait a minute, you can't say that. Because Jewry or the Jews come from Israel. They're Israelites. Well, not according to, and we've heard it already once before this morning, but not according to the 1980 Jewish Almanac. Chapter 1, again, is entitled Identity Crisis, A Brief History of the Term for Jew. And did you catch who's doing the writing of this? It was the Jewish Almanac. Here's the very first sentence of that book. And by the way, I sat with that book right in front of me and wrote it down. Copied it word for word. You don't have to trust that I picked this up from somebody else who may not have been truthful with it. I copied this right from the 1980 Jewish Almanac. Quote, "Strictly speaking, it is incorrect to call an ancient Israelite a Jew." Isn't that interesting that most of the preachers in most pulpits and on the radio today are calling David and Abraham and Noah and Moses Jews? The Jews themselves say, quote, "Strictly speaking, it is incorrect to call an ancient Israelite a Jew or to call a contemporary Jew an Israelite or a Hebrew." End quote. They know who they are. Now, let me keep this in mind. They did not intend this for,
quote-unquote Goyimias. That was for themselves. They understand their history. They know what they're up to. That was not intended. Thankfully, God's allowed some of these things to get in the hands of the quote-unquote Goyim. So, in all of this, where does the modern-day Jew come in? He certainly, and that's just one proof. And in fact, I'd suggest that you, if you do not have a copy, I suggest that you get a copy of Sheldon Emery's little pamphlet that's called An Open Letter to Any Preacher Who Claims That the Jews Are Israel. By the way, most of the stuff that I mention on here, both for you here in this audience and on the tape ministry, anything that I might mention as a book is certainly available through us if you'll write. If we don't have copies in our libraries, we'll certainly get you a copy. But I suggest that further verifies. That's just one proof. That one is certainly enough proof to show that the modern-day Jew is certainly not a descendant of Israel. But there are myriads of other proofs that show the very same thing, and that's a good start with Emery's little pamphlet. So where does the modern-day Jew come in? If they're not Israel, as so many pulpits are preaching today, if they're not Israel, where do they come in this situation? Or where do they, most specifically, come from? Let's go to Genesis and let's go back to the Scriptures and see if we cannot find how Edom comes into play in modern Jewry today. Let's go to Genesis to begin with. Genesis chapter 36. Genesis 36, first three verses. It says, "Now these are the records of the generations of Esau, that is Edom." Makes it very clear that when the Scriptures talk about Esau, they're talking about Edom. Again, "Now these are the records of the generations of Esau, that is Edom. Esau took his wives from the daughters of Canaan, Ada, the daughter of Elon the Hittite, and Olabama, the daughter of Anna, and the granddaughter of Zibeon the Hivite. Also Basemath." Man, how would you like to have a wife named Basemath? "Ishmael's daughter, the sister of Nebioth." Now notice who the progeny of Edom is identified here in this passage. They're identified as half-Canaanites, or Hittites, Hivites, and Ishmaelites. Esau, against Jacob's commands and his wishes, went to the Canaanites and married wives, took three wives, one from the Hivites, one from the Hittites, and one from the Ishmaelites. He married into the forbidden lineage of the race of their race, lineage that had been forbidden by God, and he went in and he intermarried with them, and thus his progeny became half Canaanites, or half Hittite, Hivite, and Ishmaelite. Now, let's go to Genesis 36, verses 8 and 9, and find there that it says, "So Esau lived in the hill country of Seir." Again, it says, Esau is Edom. These then are the records of the generations of Esau, the father of the Edomites in the hill country of Seir. Now, it just mentioned in verses 2 and 3 whom Edom or Esau married. And his descendants, as a result of those three marriages, his descendants here in verse 9 are called Edomites. But who were the Edomites? They were these half-breed Hivites, Hittites, and Ishmaelites. But what does that have to do with modern Jewry? Well, let's look a little further. Let's now go to the book of Esther. The book of Esther is one of those very seldom hard-to-find little books. You'll find it just before the book of Job, which comes just before the book of Psalms. Esther chapter 1. Keeping in mind whom Esau married and whom the Edomites as a result are identified as. Keeping in mind as we read Esther chapter 1 and verse 1 to begin with. It says, "Now it took place in the days of Ahasuerus who reigned from India to Ethiopia over 127 provinces." Now, I suggest if you're not very familiar with the book of Esther that you do a little bit more than I'm going to do right now. That's basically all I'm going to do to identify what's taking place on here. But I want to use that verse to set the background of what's taking place here or what's happening here in the book of Esther. It says, "During the reign of Ahasuerus, who reigned from India to Ethiopia over 127 provinces." which composed the territory, which is easily found out, which composed this territory that Ahasuerus reigned over, composed the territory occupied by guess who? The Hittites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, and the Canaanites, who by this time in history had probably all intermingled with Esau's people, being one of the more dominant peoples in the area. Now, with that in mind, with that setting and understanding for the book of Esther, let's go to chapter 8 and read the last verse of chapter 8, verse 17. Now again, there's obviously something that's happening at this time to bring about what we're going to find in verse 17. Again, I'm not going to take the time to do it in this message. If you're not familiar with what took place here in the book of Esther, go back and read so you know why this situation occurred in verse 17. Let's at least start up with verse 15. It says, "Then Mordecai went out from the presence of the king in royal robes of blue and white, with a large crown of gold and a garment of fine linen and purple. And the city of Susa shouted and rejoiced. For the Jews there was light and gladness and joy and honor." Now let me clarify something here, that in verse 16, when it speaks of the word Jew in this particular passage, it is very clearly speaking of true Israelite Judahites, descendants of either the tribe of Benjamin or the tribe of Judah that were a part of the house of Judah, who became known as Jews, who were the only people in the Scriptures that were called Jews, at least those who were not imposters. The rest of the Israelites, the other 10 tribes, were never identified as Jews. And this passage is talking about true Jews in verse 16. True descendants of Israel. Now verse 17, in light of that, says, "And in each and every province, and in each and every city, wherever the king's commandment and his decree arrived, there was gladness and joy for the Jews, true Israel, a feast and a holiday." And then the very last sentence is very important, where it says, "And many among the peoples of the land became Jews." Did they all of a sudden change their heritage? Could they go back and change the genes and say, "Now we're from Abraham because our genes have changed"? No, obviously, these people of the land were in deep trouble, and they said, "Unless we become like the Jews or take upon ourselves their religion, we'll be destroyed." And so it says, "And many among the peoples of the land became Jews, for the dread of the Jews had fallen upon them." They became Jews by religion and name because of the dread of the true Jewish Israelites, if I can say it that way, had fallen upon them. Now, who were the peoples of the land? Who was it that Ahasuerus reigned over these 126 provinces? Hittites, Hivites, Jebusites, and Canaanites. The people who were the results of the interracial marriage the forbidden lineage marriage of Esau with those peoples. These were the peoples who at this time became known as Jews. Now let me say, a later time in history, there's also another group of people known as Khazars who also took on the religion in a very similar way and became known as Jews as well. But in this case, we're specifically looking at Edom. And that Edom became known as Jews. They became a part of Jewry. You know, it's verified what we find in Esther 8, or in the book of Esther, and specifically Esther chapter 8 and verse 17, is verified by historical documents. Before reading one of those, let me read from Zondervan's Pictorial Bible Dictionary for definition's sake. Zondervan's Pictorial Bible Dictionary states, quote, "The Edomites were also subject to Babylon. Under the Persian Empire, Edom became a province called Idumea, the Greek form of Edom," end quote. Now, it's very important that you understand when the Scriptures talk about Idumea or Idumeans, it's speaking about Edom, the people who in this case took on the religion of Jewry during the Babylonian captivity, as it's described here in Zondervan's Pictorial Bible Dictionary. Remember also, wasn't it? Remember that Herod the great persecutor of Christians, was an Idumean. He was an Edomite. He was a Red who persecuted Christianity and God's people. Now listen to Josephus in light of that, keeping in mind again that Idumean equals Edom. A footnote in Josephus quotes Ammonius, an ancient grammarian, who says, quote, "Whilst the Idumeans, the Edomites, were not Judeans," and in that case he's saying while they were not true Israelites from the beginning, "but being afterwards subdued by the Judeans, they were called Judeans, or later as Jews," end quote. Josephus verifies the very thing that we find, establishes that what took place in Esther certainly did take place, and the people who were called Edom or Idumeans, the Hittites, the Hivites, and the Canaanites, took on the religion in the name of Judaism. In other words, in light of all that we've went through, and I know we've really dug around and went through the scriptures and really tried to put a lot of things together, I hope you stayed with me in what we did in this message. But in other words, the modern day Jews, first of all, the modern day Jews are not Israelites, but instead Edomites, as clearly established by the scriptures and by other sources, who were the relentless enemies of true Israel, who can easily be identified today as the Anglo-Saxon, Germanic, Scandinavian, and kindred peoples. Now, in light of that, in light of the fact that the modern-day Jews are not Israel and instead Edomites, let's turn to Matthew chapter 23. And let's again read, I've done this once earlier in previous message, let's once again, in light of what we've just read, read Matthew 23, or chapter 23, verses 29 through 37. And also in light of what we read earlier in Jeremiah 51, verse 49, and Revelation 17, 3 through 6, and 18, verses 2 and 24, where it very clearly says that Babylon was the great destroyer of God's people. And notice again that we saw very clearly that communism is described in the scriptures as being Babylon, or at least her roots are found there. And that Babylon is one and the same with Edom. And if Babylon was described as red, Edom is described as red, Babylon is described as being the great destroyer of God's people, and thus you'd expect Edom or Jewry to be one and the same. Listen now to verse 29. It says, "Woe to you, scribes, Pharisees, and hypocrites." Who's he talking about? In this case, he is talking about true Israel, those in the land of Judea who were the true descendants of Israel's line through the house of Judah, or the tribe of Judah and Benjamin. He says, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you build the tombs of the prophets and adorn the monuments of the righteous, and say, if we had been living in the days of our father, we would not have been partners with them in shedding the blood of the prophets. Consequently, you bear witness against yourselves that you are sons of those who murdered the prophets." Who was it who murdered the prophets? It was Judah. They were the ones, true Judah, Israel, murdered the prophets. "Fill up then the measure of the guilt of your fathers. You serpents, you brood of vipers, how shall you escape the sentence of hell? Therefore, behold, I am sending you prophets and wise men," future tense, "and scribes, and some of them you will kill and crucify, and some of them you will scourge in your synagogues and persecute from city to city, that upon you may fall the guilt of all the righteous blood shed on earth." Now, wait a minute. I thought that Babylon was described as being the murderer of all Christians, prophets, and preachers, and true Israel. Now it says that upon you may fall the guilt of all the righteous blood shed on earth, from the blood of righteous Abel to the blood of Zechariah, the son of Berechiah, whom you murdered between the temple and the altar. Truly I say to you, all these things shall come upon this generation. O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, not specifically the city, obviously, but the people of that city then. It says, O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, who kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to her. How often I wanted you to gather your children together the way that a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you were unwilling. Who is described in this passage as being the murderers and being anti-Christian and anti-Christ? The Jews. In this case, even true Israel. Let's not put the blame where it doesn't belong. But at the same time, let's keep in mind what we find in verse 15. It says, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you travel about on sea and land to make one proselyte, And when he becomes one, you make him twice as much the son of hell as yourselves. Where the Edomites, during the time of Esther, and from that point on, proselytes of Jewry, Babylonian Jewry specifically, they certainly were. And the scriptures say that they're even twice the sons of hell as true Israel, the true Judahite Israelites who were responsible for the death of the earlier prophets. But it was Babylon who was described as being the murderer of God's people. And yet here, the blame is laid on Judah and her proselytes. You know, when you put all that together, again, I hope you stayed with me in what I was doing, but when you put it all together, it is very clearly seen in the scriptures that communism is identified with Babylon, that Babylon is one and the same as Edom, and that Edom is now found in modern Jewry. All identified with the emblems of the hammer and the sickle as being red and the enemy of Christianity. Indeed, from the scriptures, we can see that it is Judaism, most specifically, not just the Jews, but Judaism, the religion of Talmudic Zionism, most specifically today, is responsible for what is going on, not only against Christians specifically, but even when it comes to communism. In the next message, we will verify what we find in the scriptures with further historical proof that will prove one and the same thing that we've just discovered now. Let's stand and we'll close in prayer. Heavenly Father, we once again come before you as the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. We're thankful, Father, that you've given us your word to examine and study. Lord, I pray that you'd help us always to be workmen who show themselves approved, accurately studying the scriptures, to find your truth and nothing but your truth. Bless, Father, this message again, wherever it might go. A message that, Father, will not be liked or appreciated by some, but, Father, one that certainly needs to go forth and Father, so that the truth in this regards can be understood by the populace. That once again, they would understand how and why they're being destroyed and by whom. Father, more important is that these people are not out to destroy us, but that they're out to destroy you and your Son. Lord, we want to take up the battle. We want to take up arms, not for our own sake, Father, for the sake of you and the Messiah. We ask, Lord, that the day would come quickly, Father, when your enemies would be defeated. And Father, use us in whatever manner we can be used to accomplish this purpose. We ask that you guide our week now, that you take care of and bless us. We pray and ask in your Son, Yahshua, our Messiah. Amen.